On the bridge of the Enterprise, Sulu punches buttons on the helm console while checking the forward view screen.
Approaching planet Omega 4, sir. Object ahead. Another vessel in planet orbit, Captain.
On screen, Omega 4 appears as a bright purple sphere.
Lieutenant, sound alert.
Yes, sir.
Kirk takes the captain's chair.
All decks report ready, sir.
Long-range sensor scan, Mr. Sulu. It's the USS Exeter, sir. Try to contact her, Lieutenant.
Aye, sir.
The Exeter. She was patrolling in this area 6 months ago. I hadn't heard of any trouble.
Receiving no response to our signal, sir.
The sensors indicate no damage to the vessel, Captain. I see. Magnification factor 3, Mr. Sulu.
An identical ship to the Enterprise appears on screen.
Hold our position out here, Mr. Sulu. Lieutenant, I have Mr. Spock, Dr. McCoy, and Lieutenant Galway report to the transporter room. We'll board and investigate.
Kirk takes the lift to the transporter room where the boarding party are assembled.
We are locked onto the Exeter's engineering section, Captain.
Lasers on heavy stun.
Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and Galloway step up to the transporter platform.
Energized.
As they materialize on the Exeter's dimly lit engineering deck, the landing party begin to look around the gloomy interior.
Captain.
Spock inspects the remains of a Federation uniform and a pile of white crystals. McCoy takes a scan.
Just the uniforms left.
As if they were in them when...
Exactly. When... What?
On the floor, a boot lies next to a mound of crystals.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek. Created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. The Omega Glory. Written by Gene Roddenberry, directed by Vincent McAviti. On the engineering deck, McCoy takes a reading from the crystals lying beside one of the uniforms. He shakes his head at Kirk.
This is Captain Kirk of the USS Enterprise. Is there anyone on board? If there is, if you can hear me, please respond by intercom to the engineering section. Is there anyone on board?
Spock here, Captain.
Lieutenant Galloway and I are checking out the lower levels. There seems to be no one aboard. Only uniforms.
What about the shuttlecraft?
Galloway on the hangar deck, sir. All four of the craft are still here. If they left, they didn't leave that way.
Dr. McCoy and I are going to the bridge. Meet us there. Captain's log. Aboard the USS Exeter. Commanded by Ron Tracy, one of the most experienced captains in the Starfleet. What could have happened to him and the over 400 men and women who were on this ship?
Kirk comes onto the bridge where Galloway is examining the con.
The helm was left on automatic, sir.
Fascinating.
Spock, play the last log tape. Maybe they had time to record what happened to them.
I see.
Spock, on his way to the audio console at the science station, steps warily past a uniform top hanging over the gallery rail.
Jim, the analysis of this so far is potassium 35%, carbon 18%, phosphorus 1.0, calcium 1.5. Jim, the crew didn't leave. They're still here.
What do you mean?
These white crystals, that's what's left of the human body when you take the water away, which makes up 96% of our bodies. Without water, we're all just 3 or 4 pounds of chemicals. Now, something crystallized them down to this.
I have their surgeon's log, Captain.
Kirk moves slowly across the dimly lit bridge to join Spock.
Their last log entry, Captain. On screen.
On screen, a sickly-looking Starfleet lieutenant in a blue top, slumped in the command chair, pulls himself upright to speak.
If you've come aboard this ship, you're dead men. Don't go back to your own ship. You have one chance. Get down there. Get down there fast. Captain Tracy is...
The man's eyes bulge and he falls beside the command chair.
Prepare to beam down to the planet's surface, fast.
Kirk kneels over a blue Starfleet lieutenant's uniform by the command chair. Where the limbs should be are only white crystals. The landing party materialize in a nondescript hill town. Drawn by a commotion, they see a blonde man and a chestnut-haired woman dressed only in furs and animal skins, being held by a group of Mongolian-looking villagers in quilted trousers and jackets. The villagers are about to behead the blonde-haired man. Kirk stops Galloway from firing his phaser, but as the executioner raises his axe, another villager stops him. They've seen the landing party. As Kirk, Spock, McCoy and Galloway approach, the axeman raises his weapon, but a tall, slim, grey-haired man in a Starfleet uniform calls out.
Put the axe away, Li Yang.
That's Ron Tracy.
Tracy shakes Kirk's hand.
Ron.
I knew someone would come looking for us. I'm just sorry it had to be you, Jim. I'm glad your arrival stopped this. No more of this, Wu. Lock up the savages.
They carry fireboxes.
I said lock up the savages.
Lang ahoy!
The captives are dragged away.
The prisoners are called Yangs. Impossible even to communicate with. Hordes of them out there. They'll attack anything that moves.
Interesting that the villagers know about phasers.
Tracy turns sharply to Spock.
You were left alone down here, Ron. What happened?
Our metascanners reveal this planet is perfectly harmless. The villagers, the Combs here, were friendly enough once they got over the shock of my white skin. As you've seen, we resemble the Yangs, the savages. My landing party transported back to the ship. I stayed down here to arrange for the planet survey with the village elders. The next thing I knew, the ship was calling me. The landing party had taken an unknown disease back.
Tracy's eyes narrow.
My crew, Jim. My entire crew gone.
Yes, I know we saw it.
And I'm just as infected as they were. As you are. But I stayed alive because I stayed down here. There's some natural immunization that protects everyone on the planet's surface. I don't know what it is.
Lucky we found that log report. If we'd gone back to the Enterprise...
You'd be dying by now, along with the rest of the Enterprise crew. You'll stay alive only as long as you stay here. None of us will ever leave this planet.
McCoy raises an eyebrow. Kirk takes a deep breath.
Captain's log, supplemental. The Enterprise has left the Exeter and has moved into close planet orbit. Although it appears the infection may strand us here the rest of our lives, I face an even more difficult problem. A growing belief that Captain Tracy has been interfering with the evolution of life on this planet. It seems impossible. A star captain's most solemn oath is that he will give his life, even his entire crew, rather than violate the prime directive.
Tell the lab the final reading on our tissue is Y3X.004. And I can use a second blood analyzer unit.
We'll beam it down shortly, Doctor.
Enterprise up.
Our tissues definitely show a massive infection, Jim. But something is immunizing us down here, thank heavens, or we'd have been dead hours ago.
I don't think we're going to have time to isolate it, Bruno.
problem is, it could be anything. Some spores or pollen in the air, some chemical. Just finding it could take months, maybe even years. And I've only got one lead. The infection resembles one developed by Earth during their bacteriological warfare experiments in the 1990s. Hard to believe we were once foolish enough to play around with that. The Yang Lands, Doctor.
Spock is at the door with Galloway, who's wounded and near collapse. Kirk and McCoy place him on the ground, the storeroom where McCoy has set up a lab. Kirk turns to Spock.
You all right?
Bruised only. We were approximately 100 meters from the village when five of the savages ambushed us. We managed to escape without firing.
Spock, do you see any hope that these Yangs can be reasoned with? A truce, a parley?
No, Captain. They're too wild. They act almost insane.
Captain Tracy is being quite factual in several statements. One, the Yangs are totally contemptuous of death. They seem incredibly vicious. Two, he is also being factual in that the Yangs are massing for an attack. There are signs of thousands of them in the foothills beyond. However, he was less than truthful in one very important matter.
Phaser power packs.
Captain Tracy's reserve belt packs, empty. Found among the remains of several hundred Yang bodies. A smaller attack on this village a week ago, driven off by Captain Tracy with his phaser. I have found villagers who will corroborate it.
Now, wait a minute. He lost his ship and his crew, and then he found himself the only thing standing between an entire village of pleasant, peaceful people.
The regulations are quite harsh, but they are also quite clear, Captain. If you do not act, you will be considered equally guilty.
Without a serum, we're trapped here with the villagers. Now, why destroy what's left of the man by arresting him?
I agree that formal charges have little meaning now. However, you must at least confiscate his phaser.
The fool. Starfleet should be made aware.
As Kirk opens his communicator, Tracy enters with his phaser drawn, accompanied by calm villagers.
I'll be sending the next message, Jim.
On the floor, Galloway's hand creeps towards the phaser at his belt. Tracy vaporizes him. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy look on, stunned, as Tracy points the phaser at Kirk. The comms, wearing fur caps, quilted jackets and trousers, and carrying swords, push into the makeshift lab and take Kirk's, Spock's, and McCoy's phasers and communicators. They stand guard. Tracy opens a communicator.
Enterprise, come in.
Enterprise Bridge, Lieutenant Uhura.
Captain Tracy of the Exeter.
Yes, sir. Captain Kirk informed us earlier you had survived.
I'm afraid I have some bad news for you. Your captain and landing party must have beamed down too late for full immunization. They've been found unconscious, but I'm doing everything I can for them now.
Sir, this is Lieutenant Sulu in temporary command of the Enterprise.
Our whole medical staff will volunteer to beam down.
There's no point in risking more lives, Lieutenant, since I have acquired some immunity. Perhaps the others...
Sulu!
A comm fells Kirk as he tries to grab the communicator.
At their next word, kill him.
A comm puts a sword to Kirk's neck.
Repeat your message. Come in, landing party. Repeat your message.
I'm sorry, Lieutenant. Your captain's feverish, quite delirious.
I understand, sir. When he regains consciousness, assure him that we have no problems here.
I'll contact you later, let you know of any future needs. Landing party out.
Tracy glares at Spock and McCoy. Later, a lone comm guard, armed with only a sword, patrols the small storeroom where Kirk lies face down on the floor, hands tied, apparently unconscious. Kirk trips the guard just as Tracy opens the door.
That's enough of that, Captain.
He aims a phaser at Kirk. The guard gets up.
Leave us.
The guard goes.
Captain Ronald Tracy, as per Starfleet Command. Regulation 7, paragraph 4.
I must now consider myself under arrest. Unless in the presence of the most senior fellow officers presently available, I give satisfactory answer to those charges which you now bring, etc., etc. Those were the first words duty required you to say to me, and you said them. You're covered. Now, Suppose we go on to the next subject.
Which is... why?
Good. Direct, succinct. Answer. No native to this planet has ever had any trace of any kind of disease.
How long would a man live if all disease were erased, Jim?
Whoa!
Tell Captain Kirk your age.
Age? I've seen 42 years of the Redbird. My eldest brother...
Their year of the Redbird comes once every 11 years, which he's seen 42 times. Multiply it. Wu is 462 years old.
Wu smiles with satisfaction at Kirk.
His father is well over 1,000. Interested, Jim?
McCoy could verify all that.
He will if you order it. We must have a doctor researching this. Are you grasping all it means? This immunizing agent here, once we've found it, is a fountain of youth, virtual immortality, or as much as any man will ever want.
For sale by...
out. By those who own the serum. McCoy will eventually isolate it. Meanwhile, you inform your ship your situation's impossible. Order them away. When we're ready, we'll bargain for a whole fleet of ships to pick us up. And they'll do it.
Yes, I suppose they would.
But we've got to stay alive. Let the Yangs kill us and destroy what we have to offer, and we'll have committed a crime against all humanity. I'd say that's slightly more important than the Prime Directive. Wouldn't you, Jim?
It's a very interesting proposition. Let me think it over.
Kirk has freed his wrists. As Tracy turns away, Kirk wrenches the phaser from his hand. The two captains fight, exchanging vicious blows and kicks. Tracy poleaxes Kirk with a karate chop.
Guards!
Kirk is brought into a dungeon, where the blonde male and female Yangs are in one cell, Spock and McCoy in another.
Take the doctor back to his workplace. The pointed eared one stays. And Wu, tell your men we'll be leaving soon. We'll be in ambush for the Yangs. With many fireboxes this time.
The male Yang watches Tracy carefully.
What do you think of that, Jim?
Slowly, Kirk approaches the Yang, who lunges at him.
Animals who happen to look like us. You still think the Prime Directives for this planet?
I don't think we have the right or the wisdom to interfere, however a planet is evolving.
Well, if logic won't work, perhaps this will. Put him in there.
Guards force the enraged Yang back. The Yang woman stays clear of the comm spears as they open the cell door and throw Kirk inside. He and the Yang grapple fiercely. Tracy and the guards leave the dungeon. Spock looks on from his adjoining cell. In the dingy brick cell, the Yang woman attacks Kirk. He holds up his hands peacefully. The male Yang advances on him. Kirk sends him crashing to the ground. The Yang grabs Kirk by the throat. Spock flinches. Using his superior strength, the Yang brings Kirk to his knees, tightening his grip around his neck. Kirk grimaces in pain, baring his teeth. In the storeroom, McCoy takes readings from his instruments and writes on an electronic report pad. He notices the guard has dozed off and sees, on a table at the guard's side, a dagger-like weapon. Continuing to write on the pad, McCoy stealthily approaches the dagger, checking to see the guard is still sleeping. He places the pad on the table, next to a piece of equipment and the dagger, and casually reaches over towards the weapon. The guard's sword hits the table inches from McCoy's outstretched hand. McCoy casually picks up a glass beside the dagger and sips. In the cell, Kirk throws the Yang woman off. The huge fur-clad male comes lumbering towards the tiring captain. Kirk kicks the Yang across the cell.
Don't they ever rest?
Not that I have observed, Captain. Of course, should they wish to do so, one could always rest while the other keeps you occupied.
Thank you, Spock.
Running into a corner of the cell, Kirk grabs the woman from behind, holding her in a headlock. She bites Kirk's wrist, and he's forced to release her. The three combatants circle one another. Kirk makes a grab for the woman, but the man steps between them. Dodging a blow from the savage, Kirk leans on the bars for support.
At least tell me why you want to kill me.
Good, Captain. Try to reason with them.
Kirk delivers a barrage of punches. The Yang pins him to a wall and tries to strangle him.
Keep trying, Captain. Their behavior is highly illogical.
No point in repeating that it's illogical, Spock. I'm quite aware of it.
As Kirk throws him off, the woman edges away, closer to Spock. Spock gives her a Vulcan nerve pinch. She slumps to the ground. Seeing his mate unconscious, the Yang looks up at Spock, bewildered. Spock returns his gaze impassively.
Pity you can't teach me that.
I have tried, Captain.
The Yang shuffles over to his woman and cradles her in his arms. In the storeroom, McCoy under guard is bent over a computer adjusting controls. A pretty, calm woman brings him a tray of food and taps him on the shoulder.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Noticing how pretty she is, he gives her a broad smile. She smiles back shyly and leaves. The guard, seeing McCoy's dreamy smile, pointedly folds his arms and stares. McCoy looks around, shrugs, and continues his work. In his cell, Spock is trying to loosen one of the bars at the window.
Captain, I've managed to loosen this grill somewhat. If the mortar on yours is as old...
I can't even get at it. It'd be on me in a moment. Keep talking, Spock. Don't let me doze off.
Captain Tracy mentioned there was once a considerable civilization here. The only reasonable explanation would be a war. A nuclear devastation or a bacteriological holocaust.
That's a very interesting theory. The yellow civilization is almost destroyed. The white civilization is destroyed. Keep working on the window if we're ever going to regain our freedom.
Freedom?
Kirk's head snaps up, his eyes fixed on the Yangs crouching in the corner. Spock comes over. The male Yang gets to his feet.
Freedom?
Spock.
Yes, I heard, Captain.
That is a worship word. Yang worship. You will not speak it.
Well, well, well. It is our worship word, too.
You live with the Combs.
Am I not now a prisoner of the Combs, as you are?
They stare at each other. Kirk darts a look at the barred window and moves slowly towards it. The Yang puts a protective arm across his mate. They're in a part of the cell that Spock can't see into, and he listens anxiously as Kirk reaches up for one of the bars, gripping it in both hands, and tries to loosen it. Kirk looks across at the Yang, who also grips the bar and tries to twist it.
Why did you not speak until now?
You spoke to Combs. They're only for killing.
Sinew strain, Kirk and the Yang wrench at the window bar. It gives way. The Yang pulls it free. Kirk turns to Spock.
Spock! We'll have you out in a minute.
Captain?
The Yang has knocked Kirk out. He takes hold of another bar, forearms bulging, and pulls it free. Spock can't see into the cell, but stands, listening and frowning.
Captain,
the Yang has removed all the bars.
Captain, are you able to respond?
Kirk lies unconscious on the cell floor. The two Yang have escaped into the night. Alone in his cell, Kirk begins to come round. He lifts his head from the floor, rubbing it, and gets unsteadily to his feet. Daylight comes through the cell window. Still ruefully feeling his head, Kirk goes over to the bars adjoining Spock's cell and leans on them groggily.
Spock. How long?
7 hours and 8 minutes, Captain.
7 hours and 8. Spock. Keys. I'll have you out in a minute.
Kirk has spotted a set of keys on a table beyond the cells. He heads for the barless window. In the storeroom, McCoy's guard stands by the door while McCoy works. Hearing something, he turns and opens the door. The guard sees Kirk, but misses Spock, who delivers a Vulcan nerve pinch, and together, Kirk and Spock drag him into the storeroom.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
We can contact the ship in a few moments, Captain, if I can cross-circuit this unit.
Good. Did you find out anything?
Yes. I'm convinced that once there was a frightening biological war that existed here. The virus still exists. Then over the years, nature built up these natural immunizing agents in the food, the water, and the soil.
War created an imbalance and nature counterbalanced.
There is a disease here, something that affected the Exeter landing party and us.
That's right. These immunizing agents take time, and that's the real tragedy. Had the Exeter landing party stayed here just a few hours longer, they never would have died.
Then we can leave anytime we want to. Tracy's of the opinion that these immunizing agents can become a fountain of youth. There are people here over 1,000 years old, Bones.
Survival of the fittest. Because their ancestors who survived had to have a superior resistance. Then they built up these powerful protective antibodies in the blood during the wars. Now, if you want to destroy a civilization or a whole world, perhaps your descendants might develop a longer life, but I hardly think it's worth it.
Then anything you develop here as a result of all this is useless.
Who knows? It might eventually cure the common cold, but lengthen lives? Poppycock. I can do more for you if you just eat right and exercise regularly.
Ready, Captain. Quite crude, voice communication will not be possible, but we can signal the ship.
All that bloodshed for nothing. It'll be sufficient, Mr. Spock.
A phaser beam hits the transmitter, stunning Spock.
No messages.
McCoy examines Spock.
Kirk. The savage in the cell with you. Did you set him free? The savage, Kirk, you set him to warn the tribes. The Yangs must have been warned. They sacrificed hundreds just to draw us out in the open. And then they came. And they came. We drained 4 of our phasers, and they still came. We killed thousands, and they still came.
Live, but I'll have to get him to better facilities than this.
Impossible! You can't carry the disease up to the ship with you.
He's fully immunized now. We all are.
We can beam up at any time. Any of us.
You've isolated the serum.
There's no serum! There are no miracles! There's no immortality here! All this is for nothing!
Explain it to him, Doctor.
Leave medicine to medical men, Captain. You found no fountain of youth here. People live longer here now because it's natural for them to.
Furious, Tracy turns his phaser on Kirk.
Outside. Or I'll burn down both your friends now.
Do what you can for him, Doctor.
Tracy hustles Kirk out, leaving McCoy to tend to Spock. Outside, the hill town appears to be deserted.
Where is everybody?
Dead or in hiding. Now let's see how eager you are to die. Call your ship. I need your help, Kirk. They're going to attack the village. My phaser is almost drained. We need new fresh ones. You're not just going to stand there and let them kill you, are you? If I put a weapon in your hand, you'll fight, won't you?
We can beam up Tracy. All of us.
I want 5 phasers. No 10. With 3 extra power packs each.
Kirk takes the Prophet communicator.
All right. Kirk to Enterprise.
Captain, are you all right now?
Yes, quite all right. I'd like 10 phasers beamed down with 3 extra power packs, please. Have you got that?
Say again.
Enterprise, do you read me?
Captain, this is Sulu. We read you. But surely you know that can't be done without verification.
Tracy points his phaser.
Not even if we're in danger, Mr. Sulu?
Sulu and Uhura exchange puzzled looks.
Captain, we have volunteers standing by to beam down. What is your situation?
The situation is not immediately dangerous. Have the volunteers stand by, Kirk out.
He shrugs at Tracy.
You have a well-trained bridge crew, Captain. My compliments.
Kirk knocks Tracy's phaser out of his hand and punches him in the face. He moves to pick up the phaser, but Tracy kicks him away. Kirk runs across a square, diving over a low wall. Tracy fires his phaser. Kirk just manages to leap to safety behind a building. Tracy follows after him, his steps labored. In the shadows, Tracy's face drips with sweat as he looks around. Kirk steps into the courtyard where the executioner's axe lies on a block. He turns to find himself facing Tracy, who slowly raises the phaser, his eyes cold. The phaser doesn't fire. Both men grab for the axe, but Tracy gets it first. Kirk backs away as Tracy bears down on him, eyes bulging with menace. Backed against a stack of baskets, Kirk braces himself for the attack. Tracy closes in. Kirk leaps on him. As they roll around in the dirt, 2 spears jab at them. They look up to see a group of Yang fighters standing over them. In a large room decorated with tribal hangings, the female Yang sits next to an old grey-haired Yang. The large blonde male takes a separate seat. Yang guards bring in a weak-looking Spock and place him next to Kirk, McCoy, and Tracy, who all have their hands tied behind their back and are sitting on a bench.
Spock?
I'm weak, Captain, but not in difficulty.
You must have attention soon.
My need for attention is vital, Doctor, but our need for departure is even more immediate.
Kirk's eyes narrow as he looks towards the source of the noise. He blinks slowly, pondering.
If my ancestors were forced out of the cities, into the deserts, the hills.
Yes, I see, Captain. They would have learned to wear skins, adopted stoic mannerisms, learned the bow and the lance.
Living like Indians, finally even looking like the American Indian. Yanks? Spock? Yankees?
Coons. Communists. The parallel is almost too close, Captain. It would mean they fought the war your Earth avoided. And in this case, the Asiatics won and took over this planet.
But if it were true, all these generations of Yanks fighting to regain their land.
You're a romantic, Jim.
Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and Tracy all look towards the entrance to the room. Guards part the hanging bead curtain. A bare-chested Yang wearing a bone necklace walks slowly in, ceremoniously beating a drum. The Starfleet officers look at each other in confusion. The blonde Yang stands with an imperious look.
That which is ours again. It will never be taken from us again.
A swarthy, bare-chested Yang appears at the entrance, reverently bearing a tattered Stars and Stripes. McCoy and Spock look to Kirk with eyebrows raised. the Starfleet officers all get to their feet. As the flag bearer places the stars and stripes in a stand, Tracy talks out of the corner of his mouth.
We can be handled, Jim. Together it'll be easy. I caution you, gentlemen, don't fight me here. I'll win. Or at worst, I'll drag you down with me.
The blonde Yang faces Kirk and the others.
I am Cloud William, Chief. Also son of Chief. Guardian of the Holies. Speaker of the Holy Words. Leader of warriors. Many have died. But this is the last of the Comb Places. What is ours again.
Stepping up to the flag, Cloud William solemnly places his hand on his heart.
I plaguely iron nectum flagon to pep like for stand.
Unto the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
He spoke the holy word.
You know many of our high worship words. How?
In my land, we have a tribe like you.
Where is your tribe?
Up there. One of those points of light that you see at night.
Why are you here? Were you cast out?
You're confusing the stars with heaven.
He was cast out. Don't you recognize the evil one? Who else would trick you with your own sacred words? Let your God strike me dead if I lie. But he won't, because I speak for him. Yet you killed many Yangs.
You tried to kill me.
We're not gods. We're not evil ones. We're men like yourselves.
Would a man know your holy words? Could a man use them to trick you? See his servant.
Spock.
His face. His eyes, his ears. Do the Yang legends describe the servant of the evil one?
The gray-haired elder picks up a heavy leather-bound book and offers it to Cloud William, who touches it to his lips. As Tracy and Kirk look on, Cloud William opens the book to a picture of a satanic-looking angel who resembles Spock, with his pointed ears, arched eyebrows and short jet-black hair. Cloud William looks from the picture to Spock.
Are your faces alike? Can you tell from them which of you is good and which of you is evil?
You command him. Everyone's seen that. You want more proof? He has no heart. His heart is different. Internal organs of a Vulcan are...
Bring him.
Spock is led by a group of Yang guards to stand before Cloud William. The chief looks him up and down with suspicious eyes. He leans his head in towards Spock's chest and holds it there for a moment.
He has no heart.
One of them lies.
But which? If we should kill the good, evil would be among us.
There is a way.
The elder picks up a thin piece of parchment and passes it to the chief, who holds it to his heart.
Greatest of holies, chiefs and sons of chiefs, they speak the words, but the evil one's tongue would surely turn to fire.
Spock's eyes widen.
I will begin. You shall finish. I blenista norco forcom perfectunum.
Both Spock and Kirk look down, frowning, trying to work out what Cloud William is saying.
Those words are familiar. Wait a moment.
He fears to speak them. For indeed his tongue would burn with fire. Force him! Kill his servant unless he speaks. So that we may see if the words burn him.
The chief nods. A dagger is brought to Spock's throat.
Captain, wait!
Kirk looks from Cloud William to Tracy.
There's a better way. Does not your sacred book promise that good is stronger than evil?
Tracy looks suspiciously at Kirk, then over at Cloud William.
Yes, it is written. Good shall always destroy evil.
It is written.
Cloud William, his mouth turned down, gazes levelly from Kirk to Tracy.
The fight is done when one is dead.
Cloud William sticks a dagger into the floor. Tracy and Kirk stand bound together by their left wrists.
Spock, I've found that evil usually triumphs. Unless good is very, very careful.
Kirk throws the first punch. Tracy immediately retaliates with a blow to Kirk's stomach and hurls him to the ground, where they grapple. Tracy crawls towards the dagger, but the weight of Kirk's body dragging at his wrist holds him back. In turn, Kirk tries to reach the dagger, but Tracy drags him back. Cloud Williams' woman and the Elder watch the duel closely. Kirk throws Tracy down and places his boot on his throat. Tracy throws Kirk off balance and kicks him brutally in the back.
Spock, we've got to do something.
I'm open to suggestions, Doctor.
Tracy is almost on the dagger. Kirk hooks his feet around a chair leg to hold his adversary back. Spock glances across the room at Cloud Williams' woman. He notices something at her side and begins staring at her intently.
What are you doing?
I'm making a suggestion.
The woman blinks and shudders briefly. Spock's mesmeric eyes bore into hers. Tracy is again almost within reach of the dagger when Kirk hauls him back. The young woman's eyes are in a trance-like state, fixed on Spock. Kirk and Tracy, sweating and breathing heavily, are locked together on the floor, inches from the dagger. Tracy reaches it. Kirk tries to wrestle it from his grasp. Under Spock's hypnotic spell, the woman's eyes widen. Unnoticed by the others, she picks up a communicator at the table at her side. She moves slowly towards Spock, her eyes vacant, not seeing the fight. As if directed by Spock to obey, the woman continues to move slowly towards him. She stands in front of him and turns to look down at the communicator in her hand. She opens it. Kirk has Tracy's arms behind his back in an effort to get the dagger from him. Shaking with the effort, Tracy closes his eyes. His grip weakens, and the long-bladed dagger falls from his hand. Kirk swings the blade down on his defeated opponent's throat.
Kill him. It is written. Good must destroy evil.
Kirk takes the dagger from Tracy's throat and cuts the leather binding at their wrists. Sulu and two armed security guards beam down into the middle of the room, phasers drawn. Cloud William falls to his knees.
Sir, we picked up communicator signals.
We'll discuss that later, Lieutenant.
Leslie, free Dr. McCoy and Mr. Spock. Put Captain Tracy under arrest.
Aye, sir.
Now, Cloud William.
You are a great God's servant. We are your slaves.
Get up. Face me.
The chief gets up off his knees.
When you would not say the holy words of the Iblanista, I doubted you.
I did not recognize those words. You said them so badly. Without meaning.
Kirk goes to a wooden chest. The Elder tries to stop him.
No, no. Only the eyes of a chief may see the Iblanista.
This was not written for chiefs. Hear me. Hear this! Among my people, we carry many such words as this from many lands, many worlds. Many are equally good and are as well respected. But wherever we have gone, no words have said this thing of importance in quite this way.
Look at these three words written larger than the rest, with a special pride never written before or since. Tall words, proudly saying, "We the people." That which you call Eid Plebnista was not written for the chiefs or the kings, or the warriors, or the rich, or the powerful, but for all the people. Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning out of the words, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. To ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution." These words and the words that follow were not written only for the Yangs, but for the Coms as well.
The Coms?
They must apply to everyone, or they mean nothing. Do you understand?
Claude Williams shakes his head.
I do not fully understand. One named Kirk. But the holy words will be obeyed. I swear it.
Kirk smiles warmly as he hands the parchment to the chief, then strides away. All the Yangs gather round the parchment.
There's no question about his guilt, Captain. But does our involvement here also constitute a violation of the Prime Directive?
We merely showed them the meaning of what they were fighting for. Liberty and freedom have to be more than just words.
Doctor.
Gentlemen, the fighting is over here. I suggest we leave them to discover their history and their liberty.
Spock and McCoy leave. Kirk goes to follow them, then takes a couple of steps back into the room with a smile on his face as he looks at the American flag. With a decisive step, he goes. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.